free. It's a magical price, and it's reshaping business as we know it. The story starts back in 1872, when saloons started to offer free food to anybody who purchased at least one drink. The food ranged from sandwiches to full-course meals, the cost of which were far more than the cost of the drink. The saloon owners, of course, were betting that the customers would end up buying more than one drink and develop the habit of stopping by for their free lunch. This is where the term "there's no such thing as a free lunch" originated. Around the same time, a guy by the name of King Gillette invented the world's first disposable blade razor. He famously sold the razors, which is the handle part, cheaply to places like banks, who would give them away to new customers as part of promotions. Then, the problem of building a customer base solved, he sold them the replacement blades for a healthy profit, and the rest is history. Gillette became a multi-billion dollar company, and entire industries today are based on the model that the saloons in Gillette pioneered. It's so pervasive that you probably don't even notice it. Back in the day, free radio and television programming, supported by advertising, united everybody and created the mass market. Supermarkets offered some products at cost, like milk, to attract you to come and buy more profitable items. But today, with the shift to a digital economy where the costs of production are falling every single day, we are ushering in a new era of free, and you better be ready. It's time for you to figure out how to compete with free. Why free is so attractive? The penny gap. To understand why free is such a powerful marketing method, we need to understand the psychology behind it. According to economist Nick Szabo, every time we're confronted with a price, our brain raises a flag. He calls this the toll of thinking. Do we really want this? What if we don't like it? Will I use it? Is this price worth it? Behavioral economist Dan Ariely, of predictably irrational fame, tells us that most transactions have an upside and a downside. But when things are free, we forget the downside. Why? Because as humans, we are intrinsically afraid of loss. With free, there's no visible possibility of loss. So we speed right by all those questions we would otherwise have about the value of an item and land directly on, yes, please. First-round capital VC Josh Koppelman calls this the penny gap. As it turns out, there's an enormous difference between one penny and free. The conclusion is that there are really two markets, free and anything else. A new kind of free driven by technology. In economics, it's accepted that competition will eventually drive the price of any good down to its marginal cost. In the good old days, there was always significant marginal cost because we were dealing with products that required inputs that cost money. Each Big Mac has a bun, two burger patties, and special sauce. That costs something. But the drivers of today's digital economy are computer processing power, digital storage, and bandwidth. Moore's law tells us that the amount of computing processing power for a given cost doubles every 2 years. Hard drive storage and bandwidth costs are improving at an even faster rate, which means that the price of the inputs in the digital age are eventually being driven to zero or close enough to it that companies are now starting to act as though we are already there. It has turned free from a marketing gimmick or a cross-subsidy into something else entirely. The implication is that if you are building a digital product, you can be certain that your costs of production are going to be cheaper in the future than they are today, which means you can sell a product today for what it'll cost tomorrow, confident that your costs will eventually go lower than your price. The modern poster child for free. Google. If the physical economy poster child for free was Gillette, then the digital economy poster child for free is Google. It makes so much money from its search product that it has the ability to make almost everything else the company produces free. They famously created, and then subsequently abolished, something called 20% time, where their employees could work on a side project for a day a week in the hopes that they would come up with another service that Google users would get value from. They didn't ask themselves questions that most businesses would ask, like, will we be able to make money on this? They asked questions like, wouldn't it be cool if, or do people want this? So they give away tools like Gmail, Google Maps, and YouTube, which is now generating its own revenue, in the hopes that you'll continue to use their search product. This strategy has led to a stranglehold on the search market. As of March 2017, Google held a 78% market share on the $36 billion search engine market in the US. As we covered in our summary of the great book Zero to One, Google tries to convince us that they're a technology company with their hands in many pies to take our focus away from the fact that they've created a monopoly in a rapidly expanding multi-billion dollar market. Well done, Google. Well done. The different kinds of free. Now that we've got the gist of what free looks like in the digital economy and why it's changing the game, let's move on to the different business models you can create from it. In any version of free, we are basically shifting the cost of a product or service from one person to another, or between now and the future. There are three main models that emerge from this. Let's take a look at them in turn. Number one, direct cross subsidies. In a direct cross subsidy, the producer gives the consumer product number one for free in the hopes that they will then entice the consumer to subsequently purchase product number two. The company will look at a portfolio of products and price some at zero to make other products that they sell, where they make healthy profits, more attractive. As Anderson points out, technology is giving companies greater flexibility in how broadly they define their markets, Google, allowing more freedom to give away some products to promote others. Here are some examples. The Apple Store Genius Bar service is free. You buy the hardware. The Xbox console is sold far under cost so that you'll buy the games. Cell phone carriers subsidize your phone to sell you access to their network. Number two, three-party markets. In a three-party market, the producer of product number one gives you their product free of charge. Advertisers pay to be included in that product in the hope that they'll be able to sell product number three, which is their product, to the end consumer. As Anderson points out, newspaper and magazine publishers don't charge their readers anything close to the actual cost of creating, printing, and distributing their products. Their business is not selling magazines to readers, their real product is selling readers to advertisers. Of course, this model is being dramatically disrupted as we speak in the shift from print to digital advertising, but the model remains the same. Here are some examples. Any type of ad-supported media, like almost every single website you visit on the internet, free admission for kids at museums to attract the adults who have to pay. Zenefits, who is giving away its HR software so it can sell users health insurance. And finally, number three, freemium. The freemium model is so ubiquitous these days that it probably needs no introduction. Most businesses that employ it understand the 5% rule, where 5% of users pay for the product and support the rest. Which means that every user who pays for the premium version of the service, 19 get the basic free version. Of course, this is made possible by the fact that the cost of servicing those 19 free users is close enough to zero to consider it nothing. There are four different ways you can approach the freemium model. Time limited, where you give users a free trial. Feature limited, where the free version of your service gives you limited options. Seat limited, where a small number of people use the service for free, but a larger group needs to pay. And customer type limited, which is the cousin of seat limited, as small companies use the service for free, and older and larger companies have to pay. Here are some examples. Companies like McKinsey, who give away generic management advice and sell customized management advice. TurboTax, giving away federal tax software so they can sell state tax software. Skype giving away computer-to-computer calls so they can charge for computer-to-phone calls. Thriving in a free economy. Well, as consumers, we are conditioned to love free. As business owners, we are conditioned to loathe it. Ultimately, what's required to thrive in a free economy isn't a deep understanding of new business models, but a mindset shift from scarcity thinking to abundance thinking. Think about it. If an entire market of insurance brokers and HR software companies can be disrupted by a single startup, it's only a matter of time before it happens to you. Just because you can't see it yet is of no concern to the market. If it can happen, it eventually will. It would be better for you and your company if you get there first. Anderson gives us 10 key principles of abundance thinking. Number one. If you make a digital product, realize sooner or later it's going to be free. In every competitive market, price falls to the marginal cost. The internet is the most competitive market the world has ever seen, and the costs there are trending towards zero. Ergo, all digital products will eventually be free. Number two, atoms would like to be free too, but they're not so pushy about it. Free is so attractive to consumers that eventually somebody will figure out how to offer what your company currently produces for free. Number three, you can't stop free. If the only thing stopping your product from being free is a secret code or a scary warning, somebody out there will find a way to defeat it. Instead of fighting it, figure out a way to sell upgrades. Number four, you can make money from free. There's a corollary to this whole discussion that we haven't touched on, that when the cost is driven out of a market, the value flows elsewhere. People will always pay to save time, lower risk, increase status, and the list goes on. Figure out where the value flows after your core product is free and go there. Number five, redefine your market. Ryanair is a great example of this. By making their airline seats cheap, or in some cases free, to make more money in everything surrounding the flight. Everything from car rentals to travel destinations. Number six, round down. If free is just a matter of when, not if, the best move is to get there first. Why? The first to free gets attention, and there are always ways to turn attention into money. Number seven, sooner or later, you'll compete with free. Somebody in your business, through cross-subsidies or software, is going to figure out a way to give away what you charge for. It might not be exactly the same thing, but a price discount of 100% has a way of making some things irrelevant. Your options are to match the free price or ensure that the differences in quality overcome the differences in price. Number eight, embrace waste. If something is becoming too cheap to meter, stop metering it. Number nine, free makes other things more valuable. Every abundance creates a new scarcity. 100 years ago, entertainment was scarce and time was plentiful. Now it's the reverse. And finally, number 10, manage for abundance, not scarcity. Traditional management is focused on the ability to control expensive mistakes. When resources are cheap, especially when they're digital, you don't have to manage with that mindset anymore. Experimentation and learning become your goal rather than controlling risk. So in conclusion, I'm not sure I've ever read a book where the conclusion was so clear. Everything you see around you with a price tag today wants to be free and eventually will be. What you do about that will determine your future. Good luck.